it's that time of the week again for Kayak Fishing Radio Mid-Atlantic. I am your host, Mark the Lane Crew Wheeler, and welcome. This is going to be a good show. We've got some good info to pass along to everyone, and I think it's going to impact the show with the info more than us, but our future down the road. So, we've got a couple people in the chat room. Sorry if I kind of break off and kind of drift off for a second because I'm reading the chat. We have a Black Fly Guy, what's going on, man? And Fishing Chef, Robbie, who had a good night last night at HRVT with some high-quality striped bass action in apparently superb conditions. So, congrats on that, man. You got into some fish. I went out this morning in some really rough conditions with HRBT. Wind was howling, just washer, kind of a washing machine kind of style. And I got one big 33-inch striper, fat belly, just, full of bait, of food. And, that's what I like to see with my stripers. And that's what we're going to get into, the food of the stripers, the cobia, the whatever you want to call it. So, anyway, what we're going to get at tonight is our victory. Fishermen don't, nowadays don't seem to get a huge victory. Let's see here. I know it's here somewhere. There it is. Yes, folks, we had a victory. As you probably already know, the ASMFC, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Council, voted to take Addendum 5, I think that's what the V is, along with Amendment 1. Basically what that means for all you that like the layman's terms, we won. We got what we wanted. And what do I mean by that? I mean we had a 37% reduction in this vote of all catches in Manhattan. Yes, folks. That is a big that's a relief. And if you don't know what was going on, I'll catch you up. Basically what has happened is for the past since basically Dwight Eisenhower, Manhattan haven't had a break. They have been pounded and pounded and pounded in their catch and in their lives by all the Manhattan pursing fisheries. What that has done is basically destroyed the population. Now, there's a thing called the MSP, or migrated spawn potential. I just had a brain fart on that. Maximum spawning potential. There we go. And that's a very important number for all of us. And what that basically is a, what's the maximum spawning of every fish? Theoretically, if we weren't around and there were no predators, it would be 100%. Okay? So now let's take that and let's add predators to it. Maximum spawning potential at that point, you're looking at about between a 70 and 85% spawning potential. That means 75 to 80% of the fish, are going to be alive to spawn. That's a great thing. We just had the bay fish show up in the chat room. That's Mr. Wayne Bradby, host of the TKAA tournament. Welcome, Wayne. Great to see you on there. And Mr. Rob Choi, Yak Angler Pro Staffer and owner and operator of angling-addict.com, a great blog. Make sure you check that out. But so back to it, maximum spawning potential. And folks, we had it all the way down to 8%. okay? So if we weren't around, you're looking at between 70 and 80, maybe less depending on, you know, species, and that's always something that fluctuates. But, folks, we had it all the way down to 8%. Okay? So if we had 100 fish, only 8 of those 100 fish would be spawning. That's pretty crazy. That's very crazy. Okay, so with 37% reduction, we went from 8% to 15%. Folks, that is a humongous step if you think of numbers and everything else. Okay, that's 8 fish. We're going from 8 fish laying 1,000 eggs. I'm just making theoretics here, theoretical calculations. But that's, you know, or statements. But, you know, 8 fish laying 1,000 eggs to 15 fish now laying 1,000 eggs. You just went from 8,000 to 15,000. That's a humongous jump. That is huge. So it's a, you know, that I can't say that enough, how great that is. Now, for all you that are going, well, how do we know that the fish were overfished? Well, there's this mathematical equation that some person did that I still am trying to figure out personally. But for those that know it, then go to manhattandefenders.org and look at it. But it takes into effect the fishing mortality reference points. Basically what that means is that from the day it's born to the day, you know, to the whole school until they, you know, each one dies, what's their how many die theoretically in the whole school? And the maximum mortality threshold is F equals 1.32. I'm reading it right off the Manhattan Defenders site, folks, so you can look at it at the same time. Okay, that means for every 1.0 is the total amount of spawn. So if you spawn 100 fish, okay, and out of those 100 fish, they lay 100 eggs. One fish lays 100 eggs. You're actually killing more than those 100 eggs, if that makes any sense. We're actually going outside our means. Kind of sounds like the economy, doesn't it?
Hmm.
But, 1.32 per, you know, out of the F equation is huge, is what it's just currently at. Theoretically, where it should be at is 0.62. Okay? That means that out of 100 fish, 62 are dying, okay, for whatever reason, prey, food, whatever. Okay, that leaves us, see if I can do the math in my head real fast, 38 fish left to keep on going. Okay, now, in the past, in the latest, I just cut to the corner of my eye, fishing mortality in 2008, the latest year in the assessment, is estimated at 2.28. So, we were going at 228%, and I'm using percentages here, over what the fish could handle and spawn. Now, that's huge, folks. That is absolutely huge. And sorry, reading the chat room. I thought I saw someone else just pop in. Oh, same people talking about IGFA and 1 pound test. Apparently, a guy last night at HRBT said he caught a 21-inch striper on 1 pound test. Good for him. Couldn't do it myself, but congrats to whoever did that. Not going to try that myself, but anyway. Where was I at? Oh, yes. Now, you know, that's some of the things that, folks, we can, you know. Oop, we have a caller. Hang on. 727, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Rob. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mr. Vetbackcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It is Rob DeVore, a bad back end.
How you doing, man? Hey,
what's going on, man?
I heard that, you know, IGFA records with catching stuff on 1 pound tests. You have any idea what 1 pound test is? I mean, seriously. You ever be around your mom's sewing kit when you were a kid, and they got like clear monofilament thread? It's like less than that. Try tying a knot with 1 pound test, okay?
Well,
it's like, fly fishing, people know with these, like, you know, multiple X tippets. God, I used to use that, you know, a lot of trout stream guys use it, but I've used, like, you know, tapered leaders before, and, like, at the end where you, you know, tie the business end. It's impossible to tie a knot there without breaking it. I don't see how somebody can wrestle a fish on 1 pound test unless you got like 500 yards of it, you know?
Yeah. Well, even still, it's very, it wouldn't even be considered a line class record, even mostly because the lowest you can go for line class is 2 pound or 1 point something kilogram, how they do it in the IGFA. And actually, you know what? I think you could go for a line class, but I don't think you'd want to. IGFA works in the sense that you are almost better off using their IGFA certified line. And I know Rob worked with light lines before. And Rob, could you put it over in the chat room? Are you still going for those kitties? Now, I'm talking catfish here, folks. I know Rob was going for a record for cats, blue cats, or was it channel cats? Or one of the catfish species on the James River. Speaking of James River, folks, this is the time of year. Get out there below the falls and work on those massive 50, 60, 70-pound monster blue catfish. I know many that catch some huge ones. Rob puts it, he's going after the blue cat record. That's awesome, man.
Nice.
Yeah. And I've seen some of the kitties he's put in the boat already, and it's like, ooh. I don't know catfish very well, but that looks like a big catfish. I wish you the best of luck. And, folks, I did make a mistake. Eddie is the bay fish. I wish I knew your last name, Eddie. I am sorry. It was not Wayne Bradby. I know Wayne has a similar login thingy, majigger. And I do apologize, Eddie, for missing you or making the mistake. So back to the subject at hand. And that's the Matt Hayden. So, folks, with this vote, we went from almost destroying our future to now having an opportunity to make good. And with this 37% reduction, if you read Omega and you read all these websites from these guys that make trillions of dollars off of the Manning, they keep saying, oh, we're going to go under. We're going to go under. No. This is set up to now regulate them the same way there's regulations on blue crab, on herring and shad, and everything else. And yet, they're still thriving in the commercial industry. Granted, not as many, but the ones that are successful figure that away. And guess what, Omega? You're the only ones out there. So quit crying. Okay? And I also have an amendment in there for the recreational and commercial bait guys. So this way, no matter what, everything is regulated, and we are set. Rob put in there, he was a few pounds off the 4 pound test record. Oh, man.
Go ahead,
man.
Go ahead. Is he doing, I'm not in the chat room, but ask him, is he doing it the real way, you know, or the IGFA way, where you only have to have X amount of your leader material or something, or on your spool. I know it's that way for fly fishing. If for instance, if you are going for the Tippett line record for a tarpon, let's say, and I know a couple of years ago somebody broke the record and it was like 11-pound test or 12-pound test or something, Tippett. Right, and this is Tippett only. This isn't fly line. This is fly fishing, and only like X amount of that Tippett needs to be, you know, 12-pound test or whatever. I don't know. Is he doing it that way, or is it just the entire school?
Well, I know that for any of those records, any IGFA record, you have to give your leader or the bait, the hook, the leader. And 30 feet of mainline, they don't include backing.
Okay.
Because they figure by the time you get to backing, you're putting so much stress in line, you're going to break off anyway. But I think it's 30 or 50 feet. And so this way you can't cheat. And when you go to submit the record, a representative, I believe, has to pull off X amount of line to see, you know, if you have, you know, if you're using, like, you know, 10 feet of leader, you quote-unquote, and then you go back another 75 feet and there's another, you know, tie-off to a different line, you know, to your fly lines kind of situation. But if I know Rob, he's probably using, what, 8 feet of leader for fishing the river like that, maybe less. And, you know, 4-pound test is like, man, I can't even. The lowest I've ever gone for most fishing is 6-pound, and I had a trouble
that
with
mono?
That because I'm a. For me,
is it
yeah.
mono or braid?
No, I stay away. If I'm going for records or anything like that, you want to stay away from braid. Braid's got such a high breaking point with the way they stress it. You'd go way over the line class.
Okay. I'm just. I don't really know that much about it as far as like you know. Line class records and stuff like that, like what rules are or, you know, what the procedure is or anything like that.
Rob, why don't you ask him himself? Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah.
Rob Joy.
Hey!
All right. I wasn't planning on calling, but this is kind of this guy, my friend started up this challenge down in Virginia Beach area, and he doesn't quite understand that, like, almost every company out there will claim a certain you know, pound testing on their line, and almost every single one of them is going to break over that claim that they say and whatever is on the box. As far as if you're actually looking for a line class record, you really need an IGFA rated monofilament line. Braid just does not test. There's so many issues with it. And I think IGFA was looking into it, but I don't think they found a single manufacturer that actually tests exactly to what they say it is.
Right.
And as far as the leader thing you guys were just talking about, for fresh water, it's only 6 feet. I think it might be less than 6 feet even. It's been a while since I looked at the rules. And there's a whole bunch of different rules on double leaders. And fly, for Rob, for fly, it's a whole another list of rules. You'd have to check out their website and look up their brochure or whatever. But saltwater's got their leader for saltwater is a lot longer. I think it's actually like 20 feet or something crazy like that. I'm part of a club, the Virginia Angler Club, that pretty much everything they do is based on light line. And they got a point system per fish, per pound, and all your scales have to be certified at the beginning of the year and all this type of stuff. And I've messed with 2-pound tests for a very, very long time, and it is the most frustrating thing I've ever done. It's like you can literally flick a lure the wrong way, and it will fly right off your line. It'll break, and it's insanely frustrating. And this claim of a 1-pound test, like you guys were saying, it's not going to break at 1 pound. I guarantee you that. It's probably going to break at like 10 pounds or something. I mean, it might be the diameter of 1-pound test. That's probably what they're talking about. But there is no way that you can even, you cannot cast anything with the 1-pound test with any sort of distance. You're not going to, it's going to break. I can guarantee you. And
any hook up, you're going to have issues. And even tying a leader to it, it's going to be, you're going to have issues.
Exactly. And if he caught it at the HRBT, there is no way to keep it out of the structure. I mean, I'm baffled at the whole concept of what they're doing with this little challenge they got going. I refuse to participate just because I've actually worked with accurate testing line, and there's just no way.
The
four-time test record that I was going after is actually broken already by my boss's friend. My boss is the guy who got me into that club with the light line stuff, and it was broken. It was at 40. I caught a 42-pounder. I think it was 46 was the record, 46 and change or some ounces. I don't remember. I think my boss's friend pulled it up to like 54 or something ridiculous like that.
Wow.
I'm after the 6-pound test now, but that's also up in the 60s. So I'm not actually getting my hopes up, but every time I do go catfishing, I only use 6-pound tests. And it's IGFA rated. It's by Andy. It's like a green color or something.
Oh, yeah.
Andy IGFA, something or other. And so there's striper records that are totally available if you guys are ever out on the drift. Out by Kip to Peak, I probably shouldn't be saying this because this is something I actually want to do, and the more I tell people will get ideas and probably beat me to it. But, there's a fly record for Red Drum that's totally doable in the spring as well. So who knows? It'd be cool to do it in the kayak, though.
Yeah, I've got a rod already set up with 6-pound, and I'm going to try for the striper record when we go float. The 18 buoy this year.
Buoy.
I'm going to drop that on the. I'll drop an eel over the side and see if I can wrangle one of them.
The 8-pound test record is actually less than the 6-pound test record.
Really?
No. Yeah, man. It's the 8-pound record that people are going after right now. The 6-pound is up in the either upper 50s or even 60-pound range, and I think it's going to be a long shot. I think the 8-pound test is in the lower 40s, I think. I haven't checked in a while, but that's more doable than the 6-pound test line. So just something for you to think about.
Yeah, I might have to.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, man. You kind of have to actually keep up with the records, you kind of have to be a member of the IGFA, so you can think of you like a little password and whatnot, and you get into their records.
Yeah. I'm a member. I just signed up for it last week because I'm doing I'm doing the length records. So I just bought that $50
monthly. Gotcha.
I'd like to get as many as possible. You know, because next spring I'm planning on going with you guys out to the Eastern Shore and Smith Island and all them happy places. Speaking of the Eastern Shore, and before I forget, ladies and gentlemen, please go out there and this behooves you folks. Go out and go to kayakkevin.com and buy the new DVD. You want to talk about one of the best productions I've seen in a long, fishing productions in a long, long time. This is it. I cannot.
What I think is the best part about it is that it's him, his friends, and they're not afraid to be themselves. They joke, they climb around, they're nonstop. I mean, there's so many bleeps in this thing. But, I mean, honestly, we're out on the water, we're having a good time, you know, bad words come out, whatever. But that to me is my thing. I mean, granted, I guess I'm a little spoiled because I'm his friend. I pretty much learned everything he's got on that DVD. So as far as the educational part, it's fantastic. But for me personally, it was the humor aspect and the just personability of the whole thing.
I was able to get it the other day, and you know, as soon as I got home, I put it in, and just watching it, you know, and he really hits up the Eastern Shore and the redfish. And folks, if you're going, well, I can, you know, you're watching the video and you go, oh, that doesn't look too bad, folks, it is that bad. I've only turtled that I ever tell anyone once. The worst one by far would have to be over there. I watched a guy paddling around. I launched a Kip to Peak because I didn't know about the other launch. Paddled my happy butt the extremity at miles to get over there and watched a guy get launched by converging waves. It sent this dude vertical
and I turn around and I paddle my way back in.
What happened to the guy? Did he get back into it? Because, I mean, that current elevator is insanely strong.
He was rushing up. He was coming back in. And, yeah, he went up. The kayak stayed in place, and he landed on top of the kayak. And, you know, when you're 300 yards away and you can hear the wind come out of someone, it was like, ooh. And I just kind of stayed in place, and he drifted over to me, and I was like, you okay? And he did the oh, God, no, I don't want to get it. And he got back in and started paddling back, and that's when I said I'm done.
It's definitely a scary place for sure.
Yeah,
it could be worth it if it's good. Hey man, I'll probably be listening to the show, but I gotta take care of some other things. So good luck with the show, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Definitely, bud.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye.
See ya.
All right, that was Senor Rob Troy from Richmond, angling-addict.com. Check it out, folks. Great blog, very well written. So we kind of broke off, and brought up a great point, world records. How can you get started with that? Basically, folks, become a member of IGFA. They do an amazing job with conservation and sustainability projects, and is really, one of those ones where you can really get a lot out of it. A, bragging rights, and B, just having that ability to. You always want to have the ability, if you catch a big fish, to go, I wonder if that's a world record. And to be able to go in and say, yes, this is a world record, and I'm a member of the IGFA beforehand, is a great thing. We have two new members in the clubhouse, and that is Mr. D.D. Olson and Scuba Stan. What's going on, y'all? All right. So we've hit the Manhattan, and folks, this is some great stuff that's happening. I can actually say for once I'm actually, proud of everyone and of the fishing community really stepping up and doing a great job and sustaining a fishery that's going to help sustain them for a long time with, for our kids, our grandkids, and their kids. One step in the right direction. Let's talk about the stripers that are moving in. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the stripers are in Maryland. I got a call from a buddy of mine that fishes out of a boat, unfortunately, but he said they got a couple of 40-pounders in this past week, fishing in the Indian River area, up in Delaware, in the Delaware Bay. They're moving down. The guys in Jersey are getting into them on the shoreline and having some really sustainable blitzes, which is good. Some big chomper blues. Hopefully they're moving to the bay this year. Folks, I love big chomper blues. If you don't know what a chomper blue is, we're talking a bluefish over 20 inches. You can usually tell what a chomper is because they got a really big head, they got really big teeth, and they are really, really angry. And I've got, some great memories of catching big blues. 10, 15 pound bluefish, wrecking tackle and just, so much fun. So we got some big chompers hopefully moving in, and hopefully they stay near the shore. That'll be a lot of fun. And the big stripers moving in. Folks, this is the year that I have never seen this many big stripers being caught up north. That's a good thing. A lot of big 50-plus pound fish were caught this year, and luckily enough for us, a lot of those fish were put back safe and sound. There's a couple of, I know off of Montauk, Gone Fishing Marina, right there off of Lake Drive. If you don't know where that is and you're from, or if you're from Montauk, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Gone Fishing Marina has a incentive program. You bring in a live cow striper, weigh it in, they release it after, putting it in one of their tanks to revive it, and then they release it. You get
I think it's like a $50 gift certificate to their tackle shop, which is a great incentive program. I can't say enough about them. And Gone Fish and Marina, great little restaurant too. You got to try the mussels. Oh my God. But yeah, great things are happening up north. A lot, you know. And I think folks with the newer generations growing up, thinking more along the lines of conservation, and the old school, if we catch it, we got to kill it mentality is going away, which is a great thing, that we will have more, we'll have a bigger striper population to come. All right. Let's see here. We got Scuba Stan talking about still trying to figure out a rack for his truck. You need to get on that, Stan. also asking if he can sit on Poseidon's lap and ask for a new kayak. That's nice. He's also having problems with his garage door. That sucks. All right. Let's see here. I know I had something else to talk about. Let me look at my notes here. Click, click, click. Oh. Great old school info. And I love reading old books on fishing and you know, or finding old, you know, entries from fishermen from way back. And I was able to find a old fishing log from a gentleman that lived in Virginia Beach during the 1930s and 1940s. This covers 1935 to 1940. And he was talking about the channel bass, a.k.a. red drum. And it's very interesting. In 35 and 36, you know, this is, you know, I'm sure, you know, because there's a lot of notes and it's a pretty thick little log. It surprisingly has a note to a lot of puppy drum. And I know this is a situation we're having now in here around our area where there doesn't seem to be as many puppy drum. But as I said, 35 and 36, it says here, lots of small channel bass in the, you know, in the inlets and, you know, not as many big drum. It's like, huh, okay. And then 37, 38, and 39, he comments, no more puppies, or he has a small channel bass, non-existent, lots of flounder, lots of trout. And that's pretty much all he talks about is the trout. And then in the roundhead, he makes a lot of comments of kingfish, roundhead, sea mold, however you want to call it. And then in the 40s, 19 is last note here, it says that big drum aren't around, roundhead, king mullet, kingfish, sea mullet, whatever you want to call them. Later, Stan is laying his kids down. So have a great night, man. You know, those other species aren't around as much, but there are a lot more puppy drum. Or as he puts it here, small channel bass seem to be everywhere. Can't keep the damn things off my hook. So, folks, what I'm showing here is that there is a fluctuation, as it seems. And if you know anything about fishing or look at, you know, the historic data, it usually seems to be the fish populations, doesn't matter the species, kind of ride a wave. And it's usually a 2 to 6 to 10 year flow. And I'm already seeing here, and I see it from other historic data, that the puppy drum and big drum kind of have this wave that ride every, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 years, where they'll, you know, a lot of puppy drum, a handful of small drum, of big drum, you know, and then no puppy drum and a lot of big drum. And I think now we're riding that wave where we've had a bunch of really, really good years, the past 2 years of lots of big drum, that we will find that we will have a couple of good years here coming up of puppy drum. We can only hope. For up here in Virginia Beach, I know things down in Florida are different, where you can, you know, walk on top of the puppy drum some days. But, you know, let's hope for the best, folks. But let's hope for the best. All right. I think we're going to call it a night. Talked about some good stuff. Like to, you know, thank Rob Choi for calling in. Remember, folks, angling-addict.com. This is the time for y'all in the chat room to do your shameless plugs. Folks, come down to Virginia Beach. Go to the Virginia Beach Aquarium. Say hello to Fish and Chef Rob Delaney, if I'm pronouncing your last name right. Great fisherman, great chef, working on a lot of sustainable recipes for species that you probably wouldn't think about eating. But definitely check it out. Great little place, too. Shameless plug for Robbie. All right. Of course, Rob DeVore, thanks, man. Absolute pleasure having you on, brother.
Sure.
Check out his blog, abadbadcast.com. Are you coming back and, you know, typing up some more?
I haven't recently, but I'm getting, you know, I kind of want to. I just need to be inspired. I know you missed that part of my show last night, but, yeah, I'm having some issues with my writing. So it'll come back around, though. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, I know you're going through some, you know, just like life, man. Things that, you know, when you have the good times, you got to take them. When you have the bad times, you know, you got to take that, too, and, you'll come out stronger. You know, that's why bad times, I don't just disapprove the bad times. I approve of bad times because that's what makes you stronger in the end. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, brother. Thanks for calling in, man.
No problem. Have a good one, man.
You too. All right. Bayfish, Eddie, I do apologize, man. I thought you were Wayne Bradley. Fishing Nature BT Friday night. Yeah, dude, definitely give me a call. See what I can do. Fishing Chef, thanks again. Black Fly Guy, dude, get some fish, man. Dee, you know, keep on keeping on down there in Charleston. Get staying a game kayak rack. So here come my shameless plugs. Folks, I had an incident with, if you listen to the radio, you heard me talk about Keen Footwear. And I own the Chicago boot. I own a couple pairs of their sandals now. My wife, when she gets back, because she is currently deployed, is going to have a surprise in her new footwear collection. My kids all wear Keen. And, folks, I have never owned a pair of shoes this durable. I worked as an iron worker. I had some situations with my boots where I wear the toes out from kicking steel and stuff like that. And, folks, I had those boots for a good month and a half, and I kicked and I beat the crap out of them, and they look brand new. So definitely check out Keen Footwear with their patented toe protector for the sandals, which for me is a great thing. Otherwise, I kill my toes. So definitely check that out. KeensFootwear.com, YakDangler.com, folks. Definitely check them out. Great website, lots of great info, a lot of great people. Every last one of the kayak fishing radio. Jason Soft just showed up. Says Keens are great. We gave away 8 pairs. That is www.facebook.com/golfkayak. Pick up trash. Yeah, cool. Yeah, definitely check that out, folks. Jack Angler, I mean, great info. All the hosts are members. And so definitely check that out. IrishWaterDogs.com, great company there with home of the Irish Water Dogs Invitational event. Really good tournament there. Really great bunch of people. kayakbassfishing.com. And I know you're probably not thinking about bass fishing this time of year, but you should. It's a great time of year to go fishing. With the water temps dropping, the bass are really getting... this is the same water temps, folks, as when bass go into pre-spawn and spawn. So why wouldn't you fish it? You know how aggressive they are in the spawn. Well, it makes sense, right? So go out there and go bass fishing. But before you do, check out kayakbassfishing.com. Check out kayakgear.com, home of Hook One. Great website there. Check out Appomattox River Company, paddleva.com. If you don't buy your kayak from there, you're wrong. Great group of people. Really do a great job there. Very intuitive. Lots of info. And great prices, too. Really good people. So definitely check out paddleva.com. I was known as Appomattox River Company. I think that's all I've got in the shameless plug division. And with that, I will say adieu. Remember, folks, always wear your PFD, take a kid fishing, and stay safe and tie lines. And with that, have a great night. Catch you all later.